We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
5 o'clock fire. We do this each and every day. The hottest stories in Houston. Clint Sterner run the show, Hughley. And this has just dropped within the last half hour. The Texans. He has been their special teams coach. Bill Seeley has retired 31 years of coaching. He is now retired today. Now, Clint, you're going to have a new special teams coordinator, a new defensive coordinator, and a new play caller, basically a new offensive coordinator. A lot of changes at the top of the three phases of the game.
A lot of changes, man. And look, with special teams coordinator Brad Seeley out, I mean, you're talking about not just your normal run-of-the-mill special teams coordinator. This guy's been the team's coordinator, the Texans coordinator, from 89 to 2019, and he has 41 years of overall coaching experience. You're losing a guy that has a ton of experience in the game, a ton of experience in the locker room, and I would, I don't think it's a stretch to say that a guy with that kind of experience is probably pretty valuable to the head coach in terms of bouncing ideas off of him about what he should do and dealing with players. All the way to building a game plan and how are you going to use your receivers and running backs and tight ends in the special teams units. I mean, that's a lot of experience with the Houston Texans walking out the door with Brad Seeley retiring after a 41-year career in coaching.
Is that too much change? Does that concern you at all?
No, because your other two were hired from within, the big part of change show that people don't.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, it's the terminology, man. I mean, you know, when you change a coordinator and the terminology doesn't change, and I know Anthony Weaver, the defensive coordinator for the Texans, is putting in a couple of different schemes, and maybe he's putting in, you know, let's say 30% of the defense he's changing, and he may be tweaking some terminology there, but there's a big difference between 30% that you're adding to something
and 100%.
And 100% of, man, I don't know this coach's personality. I don't know the way he communicates. I don't know if he's being serious or he's joking. I don't have a clue. Now I don't even know what the hell the language is that he's speaking. Yeah, I mean, you from the outside looking in, all three coordinator positions changing. Yeah, it's a lot of change title-wise. But with the OC coming up from the same offense as Bill O'Brien's always coached, the DC coming up under Romeo Crennel over the last few years, those two right there, I don't think they're as big a deal as some people may present.
Once again, if you missed it, Brad Seeley is retiring after 31 years of coaching. He was a special teams coordinator. We were lucky enough to be on live with John McClain, the Hall of Famer who knows everything Houston sports. And when we pushed to him who may be his replacement, this was John McClain.
What they have to do is they'll be following a Rooney rule. I said thought it would be Tracy Smith, and I still think it'll be Tracy Smith because he's earned the job.
As you said, Tracy Smith, much like Tim Kelly, much like Anthony Weaver, has already been on staff and has worked with this group and has worked with the special teams and worked with Brad Seeley hand in hand. So the terminology, as you said, will probably stay the same. The players are familiar with him. So it should be as smooth as a transition.
Yeah, the transition should be seamless for sure, if that is indeed the case. But look, when the Rooney Rule right now, it was just upgraded or improved or advanced, however you want to couch it, to include more, not just head coaches, but but coordinators that the league ultimately the teams can't keep those particular coaches from interviewing for those coordinator jobs. This is one of those coordinator jobs, man. It'll be interesting to see how the Texans handle this because they've got a really good candidate that they believe in that's been with the organization. That would be a very seamless transition into that position. But when it's all said and done, they've got to do the due diligence on anybody and everybody that wants the job and make sure that they meet all of the requirements. And so it'll be interesting to see how this thing plays out. If you're a Texans fan, you got to feel good about the fact that at the very least, you've got a guy in-house that you know is a really good fit. So at the very least, if that's your best option, it's a pretty damn good one.
I don't mean to put you on the spot. Mm-mm. With the special teams last year, where is one space? Because I know they're pretty good. What is one space where you could say they could get a little bit better or get better at?
Wow. I think DeAndre Carter catches a lot of flack. He fumbled a punt earlier in the season. Was he the one that fumbled the kickoff against Kansas City?
Yeah, he was. That was him.
Yeah, so, I mean, when you know, he catches a lot of flack for that, and I don't know where he finished the season after the playoffs, but if you look at the return yards, average yards return, all that kind of stuff, number of returns, I believe he was in the top 7 or 8 returners in the league. And so it's one of those things where you go, damn, what else do you want? You know what I mean? I mean, obviously you want a dynamic player to walk in the door that is a game changer possibly back there that you can sparingly use, but the Texans have that. You know, I mean, if you want a guy that you need in the moment to go back there and hopefully can take one out, Will Fuller's as good as anybody returning punts, right? I mean, you got guys in-house that if they can stay healthy could be that X factor, so to speak. But look, there ain't Dante Halls walking in every locker room around here going, all right, I'm ready to be your full-time kick returner, punt returner, and be an absolute monster. You know, that ain't happening. Dante Halls, they ain't falling in the laps of special team coaches across the country.
Yes, Tyreek Hill makes Dave Tuttle look like a hell of a special teams coach.
Yeah. If he's pissed off at him, he can put Miko Hardeman back here. It looks pretty good.
Yeah, he can. More fire coming to you, 5 o'clock fire. The NBA, and this was said last night on TNT from Commissioner Adam Silver, the NBA is going to a place where 60 or older coaches may not be allowed on the bench to coach this year, Clint, just due to their safety, or they may have to wear masks. This can't happen, and the Rockets would be one of the teams impacted by this because Mike D'Antoni is 69, and I think they would be at a clear disadvantage.
Yeah, look, I think it would be if it does get to that point, which I believe Adam Silver and the NBA and the beautiful way in which they execute and do business is in terms of communicating and working together for the greater good, which is getting back on the floor. I just believe, man, I understand that if it does come to that, that there need to be an asterisk on this season, and it's a problem if your head coach, in the Rockets' case, multiple coaches on your bench can't be a part of the team on courtside. That's a huge problem. But man, I just can't let myself right now think that Adam Silver's a guy that is even thinking about starting a season if really there's a chance that Mike D'Antoni's going to have to be in a press box or something, or really be in a coach's box, but that he's not going to be able to be on courtside, on the bench with his team. I can't let myself go to that place where I think Adam Silver's a guy that's going to be an option.
No, I think the NBA has been really good at figuring out how to handle these situations, and they don't make these situations look sillier. And this would be the case if they did this, because so many teams would be at a disadvantage. If you just look at the Western Conference, the Rockets and the Mavericks are the only teams that are currently in the playoffs that have a coach that's over the age of 60.
And see, so that adds even more. Like, there's no way Adam Silver's going to let two teams, in the West be affected. And the other, what is there, 13 out of the West? I mean, is that right? 13 out of the West?
13 that's coming out of the West, yeah. So, Popovich is one who's affected, and Alvin Gentry, but yeah, there's no way.
The point is it to hand a 5 or 10% of the coaches not being able to be on the floor with their players is a huge disadvantage. And if that ever comes to that point, I just can't see Adam Silver letting them play that way.
And as we discussed, the Rockets would be down to their fourth assistant because they've got older guys. More heat, more fire. The NBA Players Association, we'd heard that the organization, the owners, approved it, but the NBA Players Association has now approved the 22-team restart on July 31st to be played in Orlando, finals being ended at least at a Game 7 as late as October 12th. That is now in stone, so we will see that the league will go there. Some interesting things here. They will be in Orlando, and the players – no surprise that the players approved this. All the players wanted to play. They wanted to get out there.
They want to get out there. Like I said, they're in lockstep with everybody between them all the way up to the commissioner, Adam Silver, the owners, GMs, coaches in between. Everybody is together on this deal and they're all pulling a rope the same direction, so to speak. They're all rowing the boat in the same direction, and it's amazing how quickly you can get things done. Now, obviously, anything can happen between now and what was it? Did it say July 9th is when they start training camp?
Yeah.
Is that what they call it in basketball, training camp?
Yeah, they call it training camp.
Training camp. Everybody but baseball. Baseball's the outlier, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, appreciate that quick lesson right there, Chief. But, yeah, no, I mean, when you look at it, it's like, I mean, July 9th, anything can happen between now and then, but July 9th is the time. Here's what's beautiful about the July 9th date for me, show us, because that's when stuff gets real.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's when you start getting live interviews with, well, probably won't get many of them, but you get live action, live interviews with players about what in the hell's going on at practice and what they're looking forward to and how their body feels and how their jump shot feels. And so that's when things start getting real for us as fans.
A couple of notes here. This is from Adrian Wojnarowski, who is the best in the business when it comes to NBA reporting. The NBA PA players' leadership was informed of a plan to keep 1,600 people in an Orlando bubble at any given time. Players' families will be allowed to arrive after the first round of the playoffs, likely three members at a time. So that was a concern of how long they'd be away from their families. That to me is interesting, and I know they're being tested every day. Now you're bringing all these players' families coming in at once, which is interesting. Another one, Clint, which is odd of what we talked about earlier, for those visiting Disney World this summer and hoping to see an active NBA player roaming the parks and getting on rides, because I would be. Well, the NBAPA made it clear that that won't be happening for players nor the family members joining them, sources say.
So the old family members ain't going to jump on the plane and head out and see Daddy play a little ball and catch Disneyland. Is it Disneyland or Disney World?
Disney
that's
World.
Out there? Disney World. They're going to catch a game with Pops and go to Disney World. That's not going to be an option. If that was their plan, sorry about your luck, partner.
Yeah, it is. It is. But, no, this is interesting. More heat and fire coming today. Major League Baseball players will not take another pay cut, and they answered with a resounding rejection to what the owners gave back. Tony Clark, the director, said they will not take a pay cut. When we get back in here on Monday, Clint, do you feel like we will be any closer to seeing baseball coming back in the Astros play?
Yeah, I hope we'll get closer. I mean, you hope that what the Major League Baseball is watching the NBA do, and I know they're two different entities and two different monsters. I get it, but you hope that they watch what the NBA is doing, and they at least make a push to get moving in the right direction and get everybody on the same page, because this is nobody wins here, and so. Selfish reasons, I hope Major League Baseball is back on the diamond as soon as possible. And if it's 50 games, so be it. Let's rock and roll.
The part of it is just wild. When you, as you said it, watching from baseball or from basketball.
Yeah.
If we look at the two, we don't ever get news about what the players' associations thinking or what the owners are thinking until it is decision-making time.
Yeah.
Like, we get all these proposals released, and only proposals we hear from the NBA are proposals that we know that both sides are going to agree to.
Yeah.
With Major League Baseball, they just letting it all hang out. They just letting all
it's
the
a
bad
fight.
Blood.
It's a fight. It's an argument. It's a debate. It's not. They ain't rowing the same direction. You got half of these folks are rowing the boat. The other ones are drilling holes in the bottom of it. So yeah, it's just not a good look for Major League Baseball right now.
It's silly. That's 5 o'clock fire coming up. I just don't think that one of the big offseason acquisitions for the Texans, I don't think we value or understand how impactful this player has been in his career. We'll get into that next. Clint Sterner, Ryan, the show, Hughley in with you today on a beautiful Friday. Bun B, a Houston legend coming up here a little bit later on. But somebody we hope becomes a Houston legend here is Randall Cobb, man. I don't even think, Clint, I knew how valuable Randall Cobb was and has been for his career. And he's only 29, which means he still has some tread on the tires.
Yeah, man. Look, when you talk about a guy that's a true slot receiver in a system where they value that slot receiver and where they highlight that slot receiver and with a quarterback that depends on that slot receiver to be the answer for maybe getting out of a certain run strong and going back to a throw to the slot receiver or a blitz pickup, a blitz conversion over the middle or to the flats. I mean, that relationship of being on the same page with a quarterback is so valuable. And look, Randall Cobb played one of the best of them, the best in the business, best to ever do it, in the Aaron Rodgers. And so you're talking about a guy that we highlighted about a month ago, you and I did. You're talking about a guy in Randall Cobb that could bring so much to the table in terms of Deshaun Watson's development. You're talking about a guy that just in the meeting room, just in the meeting room alone, what's the national narrative about Bill O'Brien and Deshaun Watson? What did Dan Orlovsky say about Deshaun Watson and the Texans and what they don't have an answer for?
Blitz pickup.
In fact, I believe Dan Orlovsky said it's alarming how many times Deshaun Watson and the Texans don't have an answer for pressure is what he said. Well, there's no better way to find that answer and have that answer than to get one of the best slot receivers that have ever done it to be with your young quarterback and explain, here's how we're going to answer this, or here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you my eyes inside or outside or vertical. I'm going to give you my eyes quicker. Put it on me.
Because many people will listen to you say they don't have an answer for pressure or blitz pickups, and you would say, yeah, a slot receiver can help that. And many people would think, what?
Well, because pressure comes from inside. And I say inside, I mean like inside the hashes. I don't mean pressure can come from anywhere on the field. Yeah. But like most of the time, if pressure comes, it comes from tight end box to tight end box. It's coming from in there somewhere. They're going to hit the line. Even if it comes to corner blitz, he's going to hit that damn line at the tight end spot. When you snap it, he's going to be coming in at you. So it comes from inside. So the nearest receivers, whether it's a tight end or a slot receiver, the nearest receivers to the center, to the quarterback, are the guys that the quarterback can quickly see and get the ball to, can be the answer more times than not. There's obviously situations where the short side receiver, which Hopkins was a lot of times, he may be the answer for a short-sided blitz. But, Fuller's never going to be the answer to the wide side. The slot receiver is so close to the quarterback, so when a linebacker blitzes, he can replace that linebacker. Boom, it's an easy throw. It doesn't have to be an all-out blitz where it's a DB coming. If it's just a linebacker dog is what those are called. If it's a linebacker blitz, then the answer can be a tight end or a slot receiver. And Randall Cobb is one of those guys that he's an old quarterback. He sees those blitzes, and if Tim Kelly and Bill O'Brien don't have a good solid answer for him, then he will say, hey, look, here's what I did with Aaron Rodgers. Here's what I did with Dak Prescott last year when he threw for 5,000 yards. Here's what I've done in the past. Do you think this is a good idea? And so he could help the coaching staff as well as sit in meetings with Deshaun Watson and go, hey, this is how we answered. Because the blitz, it's not rocket science, man. Randall Cobb's seen every blitz under the sun. And so Deshaun Watson can say, man, we really struggled with this particular blitz right here. And Cobb comes in and goes, well, check this film out right here. We got four of them in this game back in 2016. We got four of those exact blitzes, and watch how me and Aaron Rodgers torched them. Boom. Next thing you know, communicate it. Next thing you know, Deshaun's got an answer for pressure. And so whether you're talking about on the field, recognizing it and making it happen in real time, or you're talking about in a meeting room, developing the quarterback, there's no doubt about it. Randall Cobb will be a weapon for Deshaun Watson's development as well as the Texans on game day.
He's probably been the biggest offseason guy that I've looked at and saw the response from Texans fans and been like, some of you, the crushing of him, like maybe if you a couple million dollars here or there from what you gave him, the contract, but still like This is an offense, as you said, that have wants to be able to use the slot. It wants to. You think we hope there are some changes, but if you look back to what New England had from Wes Welker to Danny Amendola and now to Julian Edelman, they want to use this position, and they have not had a great player at that. Hell, not even had just real serviceable players at that position. Just to give you an understanding of how valuable he is. PFF, and I'm not going to tell you I'm the biggest fan of PFF.
All right.
But PFF, they've gone over and did the war and did their ratings of the top five most valuable Green Bay Packers in the last decade. The top five: Aaron Rodgers 1, Jordy Nelson 2, Tremont Williams 3, Randall Cobb 4.
You got to give me one more because the fact that he's above the next one.
Davante Adams is 5. And I'm gonna tell you, there are a lot of people out there and say Clay Matthews was a hell of a player that's not on that list. He was fourth on that list in terms of most valuable players for the Packers in the last decade. And this is a team that has consistently won.
In the playoffs. Yeah, it's. I mean, and I guarantee you, I don't know Aaron Rodgers, but I guarantee you, if you spoke to Aaron Rodgers, he would speak very highly of Randall Cobb and what he meant for him on the field. We talked a couple of days ago, show, about it. Like, I mean, we can talk about the blitz pickup and the quarterback mind that's in the slot right next to the quarterback, so they see things similarly and all this kind of stuff. But you can also add to that his ability to uncover when the quarterback extends plays, which Deshaun Watson is going to extend plays more than really anybody that he's ever played with, including Dak Prescott. And so Randall Cobb's ability to uncover and make himself available in those situations are elite as well. So, I think you're going to look at this season show in 2020, whatever it turns out to be with this COVID-19. You'll look at this particular season, and it would not surprise me one bit if offensively the biggest addition this season in 2020 was Randall Cobb. You hope it's Cobb or Johnson. I mean, Cooks or Johnson. You know, you hope it's one of those two, because I think that would mean that this offense is really churning. If you look at those two guys and you go, whoa, they had great seasons. But I think if you were going to bet on something to specifically happen, if you were going to bet on a guy to put up certain numbers, barring health, take health out of the mix, if you were going to put put money on a certain player to do what he's done in the past at a high level and be a really quality slot receiver, have a bunch of catches, be a safety valve for a quarterback, I don't know that there wouldn't be more money put on Randall Cobb than it would be, is Cooks a phenomenal deep threat, and does he get back to his 2016 style? Does Fuller, was it 2018?
You're talking about with Cooks?
Yeah, Rams, Cooks, 2018.
Yeah, 2018.
Yeah, and or Fuller, does he stay healthy and go big and get over the top of the deep threat stuff? You know, if I'm a betting man, I feel real good about Cobb doing what Cobb has done in the past. And apparently PFF and the Green Bay Packers think pretty highly of that.
Now, I want to voice something that I can hear someone driving around that just didn't get a chance to text it in. So I'll hear it. Hey, show. Now, come on now. That was last decade with the Packers. This is a new year, and many people still think like, oh, Randall Cobb has the injury issue, and he slowed down, and he's 29. At 29, Is that an area where you would be concerned that his skills would diminish so much that he wouldn't be the player that they would need him to be?
No, not at all. Now, I mean, there's obviously an injury aspect to his career, his resume that you've got to be. Yeah. I mean, but damn, how many – Davante Adams is right below him. He's been injured two different times, I think, for good stretches of the season the last 2 years. I mean, you look at these really, really good receivers that play a lot and that essentially attack the middle of the field, and, man, they get injured. The Texans fans have been just flat-ass spoiled because DeAndre Hopkins is a monster. He's like a damn transformer. He doesn't get hurt. He gets banged around. Hell, he plays a reckless style of ball in terms of going up and making catches and coming down on the back of his damn head, catching the ball between his legs, and he never gets hurt. That is rare, man. That don't come around very often. So outside of your top, you know, your top receiver in the league in DeAndre Hopkins, I mean, when you get to that next level receiver, man, guys get concussions. Guys pull hamstrings. It's unfortunate that the other end of that spectrum is Will Fuller. If you're a Texans fan, you had to live through that. But there's a lot of space between Hopkins and Fuller in terms of the injury aspect. And I think that Cooks and Cobb, they fall in that category, and David Johnson falls in that category. But that don't mean they're not any good. He's 29 years old. He can still roll. He had 55 catches for 828 yards last year.
Yep.
He averaged 15 yards last year with 55 catches.
With a weaker quarterback.
Yeah, with a quarterback that I don't think is as good as Deshaun Watson, especially at stretching the field. And so, I mean, golly, I don't know what else you want the guy to – he had 38 catches for 10 yards a catch in 2018. I just don't know what else you want from the guy at this point in time.
My question, Clint, is because of how this is set up with Deshaun Watson and then those two guys on the outside with Fuller and Cooks, can you consistently beat one-on-one coverage because he's going to see a lot of it because those guys on the outside? The answer to me is yes. Still, he can still beat guys one-on-one, which he'll see a lot of, and I think there can be big plays from that.
Well, here's the deal. So here's the what matters is you line me up a slot defender that you feel good about defending Randall Cobb, and I'll tell you, you ain't got two more defenders that you feel good about defending Steels and Fuller on one side and Cooks on the other.
Yeah, haven't even
got I'm going to tell you, you ain't three deep talented enough to cover Randall Cobb.
No.
That's not a stretch.
No. Houston rap icon Bun B will join us coming up. Yeah, you got to let that go a little bit. You got to let that go.
My cup ain't full yet, baby.
It ain't, man. It ain't. It's a Friday. It's 5:35. I'm in it. Welcome in. Clint Sterner, Ron, Nashil Hughley, Ed Wynn with you. And we are joined by a Houston legend. A legend here, Bun B, man. We appreciate you jumping on with us, man. How you doing?
I'm all right, man. I can't complain right now. You know, all things considered, I'm okay.
I got to get this out the way, man. I want to know when you – this is personal for me, man. When you made the song Let Me See It, did you know that – when you heard it, did you know that that was going to be a song that many men – we're going to find them way themselves in clubs, finding a wall so they can get down up against a wall to have somebody just break them off. Did you know that was what that song was going to be like when you first made it?
Well, you can't control nothing but your intentions in life, so that's what I intended it for. You know, but I'm so glad for myself and, you know, so many men around the country that's what actually came to fruition for them.
Well,
so collectively, to all of y'all out there, you're welcome.
Thank you. Hold tall for me, man. I'm telling you, I almost pull my hamstring, get so low trying to get to that song.
Hey, Bun, man,
So did she.
Hey, man, I read your Texas Monthly article, which was, golly, that was probably 5 years ago now. And it talked about when you were going to perform with the symphony, man. And one thing stuck, I believe it was the symphony or the orchestra or whatever it was. It was outside.
Houston Symphony. Houston,
yeah, symphony. It was outside the rap hip-hop genre. I know that much. But what stuck out to me, man, is you were quoted in there, and I'm not going to quote you word for word, but you were quoted in there talking about how important that moment was, not for you and not for you for financial gain or career advancement, but for the rap industry and the hip hop and the world of hip hop and the younger generation coming up, man, what is it about you that's always been about raising the next guy up and helping the next generation and making it about more than just yourself?
Well, you know, my parents got divorced when I was young. And I ended up living with my mom. And then I had older brothers, but I have three older brothers, but two of them were in and out of prison and most of my life. One of my brothers has actually spent more time in prison than he has out of prison. He's in his 50s now. He spent more time in prison than he has out of prison. But my one brother that was there was an amazing influence on my life. It's in terms of direction, you know, educating me, mentoring me. And so I understand that there are a lot of young men in America that don't have that. And once I realized the platform that I had and the reach that platform afforded me, I wanted to make sure that I didn't abuse it. Because there were also other people like James Prince from Rap-A-Lot, people like Too Short, you know, who always led me in the right direction and always gave me what I needed to prosper and progress in this country. And so I feel it's an obligation and my duty and an honor. I'm honored to be able to speak to young men in America, lead them in the right direction so they can, you know, take advantage of what this country has available for them, so they can, you know, live a long and fruitful life and eventually get to the place where they can get up on that wall and let girls let them see it.
Come on now. Come on now. We're joined by Texan legend, Texas legend, hip-hop legend Bun B is with us. And, man, it's good to hear you go through that and talk about the influence is in also using your platform. Bill O'Brien used his platform. I don't know how much of that you heard earlier this week when he addressed the George Floyd situation, man. I'm wondering maybe the sense of feeling that you had listening to Bill O'Brien express and really just give us about 12, 13 minutes on his feelings on race and how things need to be better coming from his end.
Well, I'll be perfectly honest. As a Houston, Texas fan as of late, I haven't really been that happy to hear Bill O'Brien speak. You know, I've had my issues with the man in terms of how the direction of the team, personnel decisions, obviously, and the like. But I commend anyone who is brave enough to get out there and use their platform for the greater good of mankind right now. So, you know, that's one thing I can say about him. I would encourage him, though, while he is encouraging his players to go to the memorial service. I'm not sure what his plan is, but I encourage him to go as well. You know, I think at a time like this, while I appreciate our head coaches and, you know, even Cal McNair making his statement about the situation, while I appreciate them talking about it, it wouldn't hurt to see a little action as well. You know, it's a public service. He'd be more than welcome to go and pay his respects. And I think it would send a good message of solidarity to him and his teammates right now and to the city of Houston. You know, when we did the march this Tuesday, Tillman showed up. And I also got word that Jim Crane was available if we needed him to show up as well. So it's good to see these billionaire owners of these organizations locally not afraid to stand with the people at a time like this. You know, and that's, Houston is a different city, right? I travel around the country. I see how other cities move in terms of leadership, elected officials, ownership of their sports franchises. And a lot of people are removed and detached from the public sentiment. And I'm proud to be a Houstonian right now, you know, because everybody that has some level of authority in this city has been using it for the right reasons.
Bun B with us. I'm curious from you, man. We as this country have been here before. Hell, we were just here with the Ahmaud Arbery situation where he was gunned down in broad daylight running, just jogging in the neighborhood. Does it, you've been around, as you said, the March Tuesday, does this feel different to you, like in terms of there may be some real action as you just talked about? Does this scenario with George Floyd and how everyone's reacted from sports teams, owners, you talked about Jim Crane, the McNair family has been vocal about this. Does it feel different for you this time?
It does. And I've been trying to put it in a proper perspective for the last couple of days. In terms of Houston, right?
Yeah.
Houston has stood in solidarity before for the city, right? Make no mistakes about it. George Floyd was a Houstonian. He was living in Minneapolis, but he's born and raised in Houston. So George was ours. And in the toughest times, the city of Houston has found a way to stand together. We obviously did it with Harvey, and that's still on a lot of people's minds. But I think nationally, right? I think the reason that everyone, I mean, the majority of people, are feeling the way that they feel is because there's a level of connectivity happening right now in reference to the pandemic, right? Like The pandemic was another situation that affected everyone the same way. And so I think, you know, a lot of people are frustrated. A lot of people are anxious. There's a lot of tension. You know, you have 40 million Americans are without jobs. You know, there's a lot of things happening right now. And I think everybody's just kind of sitting in their house, you know, trying to find the right way to pass the time. And I think this thing comes across the screen, and pretty much everybody's initial reaction is disgust, you know? And so I feel like the sentiment that most people have in this country is shared, right? There's obviously going to be a few people that don't agree with everything. There's obviously some people who may not feel this way, but for the most part, right? People are just like, you know, they're frustrated with this because we all want our country to be great, right? We all want everyone to have a good quality of life. We all want our children to have opportunity, right? And so when people see things like this, you know, as far as we've come, when we look at technology, we look at our interconnectivity that we have, and we've advanced technologically, economically, many ways we're ahead of the curve as Americans. But when it comes to dealing with racism, we're still far behind the ball. And I think a lot of people feel that same way. Look, enough is enough, man. Like, our police shouldn't be allowed to kill people. Racism should be dead. I know a lot of people, you know, would like to believe that those days are behind us because we've made some very big strides in this country. But when things like this happen, it kind of reminds everybody that we're not where we think we are and that we can all do better. And that's what I think people feel right now. It's just like, look, man, this stuff should be way behind us right now. And we all collectively think that we should be doing better, and we should. And now's the time to do your part. Now, you know, for my generation and probably yours as well, this will be our defining moment. 2020 will be the year that defines who you are, what your character is, and where you stand in terms of injustice, racism, and basic humanity. And I don't think people want to be on the wrong side of history for this one.
Texas rap legend Bun B, join us on Sports Radio 610, Houston Sports Leader. Bun, I'm a 42-year-old white man born and raised in Baytown, Texas. I know you're from Port Arthur, Texas. Y'all were actually, that was our district back in the day, man. So I spent many a day and night in your area. And I try to ask every black man that I get on the radio or I come in contact with over the last week, man, is for the white community, what can we do, in your opinion, what can we do moving forward other than obviously in the moment tell everybody how disgusted it is, how much it hurts, how saddened it is? You and I both know that's going to come to an end. The marches and the protests at some point are going to come to an end. Moving forward, what can we as the white community do to help move the needle and progress through this thing?
Well, first of all, let me just say, as a black man, I appreciate the compassion that people feel, because you don't necessarily have to have that, right? And we would like to believe that everybody feels the same way about this, but they really don't. And I think we've gotten to the point in our country where there's a lot of uncomfortable conversations that people have been avoiding. And I think it's time to have those conversations, no matter how uncomfortable they are. Look, I'm a parent, right? And there's a lot of uncomfortable situations that I've had to deal with, right? You all got to have that sex talk with your kids. That's uncomfortable, right? That's just universal as a parent. But as a black parent, it's also the uncomfortable conversation of being aware about racism in this country. There's the what we refer to as the talk, where we have to teach our black children about how to interact with people of authority, particularly the police force, to try not to antagonize the police and put yourself in a situation where you don't make it home safely. You know, we tell our kids, look, be respectful, keep your hands visible, say yes, sir, no, sir, you know, defer to the authority figure. And if something happens during that interaction, just do your best to get home safe, and then I'll deal with it once you get home. I'll take it from there.
I can hear my mom.
But in the middle of that interaction,
I can hear my mom saying that to me, man. I can hear my mom saying that exact quote to me when I turned 15 and I started driving. Get your ass home.
Yeah, now I'll take it from that. Let me and your daddy worry about that. You just get home. You do what you got to do to get home. But I think for white Americans, it's time to have the talk with your children, right? Talk to them about what they see. Ask them how they feel. Because here's the reality, white America. If you don't talk to your children about race in a peaceful, humane way where you acknowledge people's humanity and people's dignity. But the way that social media operates right now, someone else is going to be having that conversation with your children. They're going to pervert the viewpoint, and they're going to lead your children in a direction that you are probably not comfortable with. So if you don't have these conversations with your children, I can guarantee you someone else will, and you might not like the result of that conversation.
Bum B with us. I got to get this question to you, man. I know you're a big-time sports fan. When was the moment? When was the moment where you knew like, oh, I'm a crazy sports fan? What was the game? What was the sports moment for you where you said, oh, I'm all the way in?
The Vernon Maxwell shot during the finals. That was it for me. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm a big football guy, and I grew up wanting to be Earl Campbell. And I actually talked to Earl Campbell this week, which I'm good now. Like, as far as sports, I'm good. That's my personal GOAT, you know, from UT to the Oilers. Like, you couldn't ask for a finer person for me as far as sports is concerned. But when Vernon Maxwell hit that three-point shot, and I realized that there's, like, beyond the shadow of a doubt, yo, the Rockets are about to win the NBA Finals. Like, at that point, I felt like, okay, there's nothing else that can be done. It's like, we cannot be stopped. Like, in the heat of the moment, and when it's clutch time, like, we're there. Like, Hakeem's the best player in the league. Jordan's not here right now. There's nothing that can be done to stop the progress of the Rockets. That was it for me. Like, I've had some moments watching local high school. Like, I went to Port Arthur, you know, watching Port Arthur Lincoln win all those state championships. That was a big moment. But to see Houston on the verge of winning a national championship, that just put everything in a different perspective, because that was something you watch other cities do, right? That's just something that you watch Chicago do, and you watch New York do, and you watch L.A. do, and Detroit, and you know, all these other different cities. But I realized then, like, okay, this is about to be our moment, you know, and I don't know how far it's going to go. I don't know if you know, how extensive of a legacy we're going to have. But I just remember sitting in that room watching Vernon Maxwell hit that three-point shot. And, you know, outside of the World Series being won by the Astros, I can't think of a higher moment of elation.
Hey, Bun, we had Mario Ellie on the other day. It was the 25th anniversary of the Kiss of Death.
Yeah.
I so happened to be wearing a shirt that day that had his picture on it, talking about the Kiss of Death. It was a big moment. But he talked about the winning the championship that year, and I had to ask him. I said, "Man, what'd you do after y'all won it?" And he brought up coming up here in a limo on 59, which is right outside our studios right here. And essentially people stopping on 59 on the highway, out with brooms, sweeping, high-fiving, nobody fighting, everybody just having a great time, man. I got to ask you, when that was going on, when Mario Ellie was in that limo out here on 59, where was Bun B? What was going on in your world?
I pulled over because I was in a car when it happened. I pulled over. There used to be a Bennigan's on the corner of Kirby and 59. And I was with Pimp C, and I was with his oldest son. And we all pulled over into that Bennigan's parking lot and just kind of sat there and, like, absorbed the moment. Because you could hear every car on the streets of Houston horns blowing. Everybody was waving out of the windows. It was just a feeling that kind of took over the city unlike anything I'd ever felt up to that moment. And I will always remember being on that corner in that bin, because it's not even a Bennigan's anymore. I think it's a bank, the Chinese restaurant there. There's like a Taco Cabana and all of that. So that building doesn't even exist anymore. But every time I pass off Kirby and 59, I look in that parking lot and I remember that moment.
That's sports, baby.
Yeah, look here. I know I was in a place that my white ass shouldn't have been, with no shirt on, swinging around my head. Boy, I tell you that, Bun. I don't know how I got back. My mama told me the same thing she told y'all. Get home safe. I don't know how I got home safe that night, but I damn sure enjoyed the championship. Hey, you mentioned Pimp C, man. I've got a riding dirty in 96, man. I graduated high school in 96. That was between high school and college. That UGK album with Riding Dirty was big in my world, man. What What track off of Riding Dirty is Bun B's favorite?
I'd have to say. Don't get me wrong. The song that you're playing in the background now is pretty prevalent.
There you go.
But I'd have to say One Day, because I feel like the sentiment of that song will always make sense. Unfortunately, that's a fact of life that we can't hide from. We all live and we all die, right? And so what matters is what you do in between those times. And if there's any song that I've made that you will always be able to play at any given time or any point in history that's going to make sense out of every record I've done, and I've done hundreds of my own personal songs, and I've recorded hundreds more with other people. But that's always going to be the most poignant song that I've ever been a part of. That song is going to live much longer than I will.
Hey, man, we could do this for hours. No doubt. We got to get out of here, man. We appreciate you so much for jumping on with us. Man, I'm telling you, I'm looking at the text line. You've had some powerful words and impacted some people who've been listening, man. We appreciate you joining us.
Now, I love them all, man. I really care about this city. I care about, you know, our general collective condition. But I know what Houston is. It's not what they say we are, not what they think we are. It's who we actually are. And I will fight for the death to represent this city and represent the people of this city in the best way possible, because I know that this city would do it for me.
My man. Appreciate you jumping on with us.
Anytime, guys. Anytime. All right. Now, let's get back to some Rockets basketball. Yeah, baby.
That's Bun B, Clint Sterner, Bridget Falcone. We've had a great time. Texans All Access right behind us. Mark Vandermeer, John Harris, and I got their names right. No better way to end the week. We've had a lot of fun. A strong week. I've had a good time in Houston my first week here, baby. Have a good time. As always, I'm Ron the Show Hughley, and we love you, baby.
When I wake up in the morning, love.
Me and Coors Light and jump off in this pool.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.